Hi, everybody, and welcome to True Stories from Tinseltown. And I'm very excited about the guest today because he is a super duper fan of classic movies. And I found him on my Facebook page, and I was thrilled that he came to it because he added so much insight and info that I didn't know. So let's welcome a big old classic movie fan, Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Grace. How are you?
I am swell.
I'm going to be honest. I'm a little intimidated here because most of the people you have on here are, you know, professors who wrote books or people with podcasts or you know, I've looked at some of your podcasts. You got people who actually, you know, were friends of, and
daughters.
Stars. Oh, I know. You know, and I'm just, you know, I've watched a lot of movies and have a lot of quirky ideas about old movies. That's about it.
But that means you're a fan, and that's good because yeah. I think it's good. And that was actually my plan with the podcast, was have people who wrote books, people who have blogs, you know, anyone who might know people and fans, just fans who have great knowledge and love of classic films. So I'm thrilled you're on, and don't feel intimidated, and you're going to be fab, and we're going to have fun. So tell me, how did you get so into classic movies?
You know, that's a great question. I think that, well, first of all, I'm a history buff. Always have been. Even as a kid, you know, I just like reading history and things. And I think one of the things that attracts me about older movies is it's really almost a contemporary view of history. Because you get a feel for what people were thinking and what people were doing. And, you know, it's not like it's a contemporary movie and they're trying to make it look like 1940s.
Oh, that's a big fail.
It is the 1940s.
Yeah, it's a big fail when they try to do that. Generally, it doesn't.
Yeah, well, and you can always tell. The thing that always tips me off is when you look at the cars, all the cars are shiny and like collector cars, and you watch an old movie and all the cars are all beat up, you know?
I don't drive, so I don't really know much about cars. Isn't that pathetic? I've lived in New York a long time, you guys, since I was 20. And I am a danger on the road. I am a danger. I got a lifetime bus pass and subway pass. Stay off the road. I'm danger on wheels. So you look at that and it just doesn't work. So
yeah, and you know, and it also, you know, you look at a movie, you know, some of these pre-code movies, especially like the 1932
ooh la la
pre-code movies, you know, and you realize, you know, they're talking about life in the Depression. And there was a movie you had on your Facebook page with Tallulah.
Faithless.
I mean, my gosh, you talk about something that, you know, that you think things are bad now and things we have it tough today. Holy cow.
You guys have to see that movie. What do you think of Tallulah? Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. I watched it. That's really the first movie I've seen her in a starring role. And I thought she was very good. I thought
she
held that part well.
Yes.
And it was sort of the ironic thing to me was that when the movie started, you know, she was pretty much an independently wealthy,
spoiled rich girl.
Yeah. And Robert Montgomery was the male lead, and he was sort of a struggling young architect.
Not really. He was making 80 grand a year or 60 grand a year.
That's true.
In 1932. That was damn good dough.
Yeah. Well, he was a working man, I guess.
He was
as opposed to her, she was the idle rich.
Right.
But the thing that was interesting to me is that they were, when they had money, they were constantly fighting. And, you know, they broke up and all these things because when they both had money, when they both became poor, when he lost his job and she lost everything.
And they finally came in touch with each other.
Yeah. They actually became sort of almost fell in love and developed a bond where, you know, they're willing to do anything for each other.
Literally.
So, yes.
We don't want to spoil it, but it is some kind of movie. And I would advise anyone who loves movies and who loves pre-codes to see Faithless. Tallulah's fab. And it is really, that was the first pre-code I've ever seen when I read up on pre-codes. And I was like, wow, you know, really, you better put on your lipstick. Maybe you should pinch your cheeks, you know, and then I'm like, wow. And then I think the worst actor I've ever seen in a movie was his brother.
Yeah.
He was horrible.
Yeah, he was a little stilted there, wasn't he?
I told you she'd end up on the street. She's a no good, good for nothing. Okay, so you saw Faithless, and but what?
So my interest in movies, basically my sweet spot when it comes to movies is probably like 1930 to 1950.
Mine
to be
too.
With you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've watched some silent stuff. I get into some of the 50 stuff and the 60 stuff I'll watch, but you know, I'm not into the actors and the directors and all the detail around the production of the movies the way I am in the 30s and 40s.
I'm the same. So, you know, those are my favorite decades for the films. But how old were you when you got into them?
You know, the thing with me was, is I remember when I was in grade school, and you know, this was in the early 70s. You know, all the other kids were going home and watching, you know, cartoons after school, and I would rush home and watch the 4 o'clock matinee.
Yeah,
you know, they had a TV show that had old movies.
Yeah,
and you know, and you know, I used to watch it because, you know, I liked westerns and I liked war movies, and you know, I liked Audie Murphy. He was my favorite actor.
Stuff. You know,
yeah. And then, but, you know, I also remember, though, that they had Thin Man movies on. They had the whole Thin Man series. And, you know, that's probably the first movie from the 30s that I remember. And, you know, I'm probably 12, 13 years old, but I liked it because, one, it was a mystery, so it was sort of fun to watch. And two is I liked Asta. I liked the dog.
Oh, Asta was great. Oh, my God.
So, you know, and then they had, you know, of course, Abbott and Costello movies and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things with watching the movies like that so early on is, you know, you become accustomed, and this is going to sound weird, but you become accustomed watching black and white.
Exactly,
movies.
Because so many people, I had this woman on, she has a great blog, Cary Grant Won't Eat You. And I asked her why that name, and she said because people literally don't just get turned off from a movie just because it's black and white, and it's like, just try it, you know, no one's gonna eat you, you're gonna like it, right. So it's true, people just I got used to the black and whites as well, and then I'd come home, I'd watch classic TV, and my dad would watch classic movies and I'd watch them with him. So I was very young as well when I got into these, but then I really learned in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah, and I think as you get older and you start to become a little bit more able to understand some of the plots,
wow,
the things going on, and you know, and then all of a sudden you sort of realize, well, you know, there's some. You know, this is some pretty, and the acting is superior to anything else.
It's so good. And you know what? I have to say this. I think, you know, I hate superhero movies. I hate all those stupid movies. I just do. I won't go.
Yeah.
I won't even see them if you put it in my backyard for free with a huge, you know, with a huge thing. I wouldn't watch them. But, you know, the thing about, they don't give them a chance, but the plots, the acting. I even like the sci-fis where they magnetize, they put a magnifying glass on a spider. I think that's better special effects than they have now. That's just me. Call me old-fashioned, and I'm not 99, believe me, guys. But, you know.
Well, you know, if you watch the original King Kong from 1933, you know,
I'm afraid. It makes me cry. I can't. Not that I'm afraid of King Kong. I get so I can't because I cry. I feel so sorry for him.
Oh, yeah.
He's a victim.
End, yeah.
Oh, victim.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Beauty that killed the Beast. You know, that's the classic line at the end. It's a great movie. But, you know, I think as I got older and again, you know, that ability, but, you know, sort of the way that I came toward, you know, Kay Francis was, you know, if you look at most of the big stars of that year, the people that you know, I had a prejudgment on people like Joan Crawford. You know, when I was in my late teens and 20s, I thought of Joan Crawford. I thought of all those horrible
Mommy Dearest.
Yeah, and Mommy Dearest was, you know, that was really why her name was in the press after she was passed away. And then, you know, you know, Bette Davis, you know, I'm thinking of sort of that wild, brassy woman that was on Dick Cavett.
Yeah, you can watch them now. They're amazing. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she definitely has an opinion on everything.
Yeah, you know what? And, I'm Team Joan. People think I'm they think I'm terrible, but I'm Team Joan. I don't know why. I just am. I feel some sort of empathy for her because of her upbringing and what she went through, and I can see the strictness. Also, I think I read somewhere that Joan knew that Christina was writing this book before she died.
Oh, really?
And hence, they know why they're left out of my will, because they were looking on the book. Okay, so let's get back to one of my faves and your faves, Kay Francis. Go on again about Kay.
So you know, with that approach, you know, those stars you all, they worked until their 60s and 70s, and they were in the public eye that long. You know, Kay, she early on, she said, "I can't wait to be forgotten," when she was fighting with Warner Brothers, and she basically stopped making movies by 1947. She was on, did some sort of dinner theater type things for a few
70
years.
70 credits. Yeah.
And then by the mid 50s, you know, she hung it up. So we never really got to see her in that older age as being that, you know, she never developed that sort of view as being the elder, you know, woman, you know.
But what would they have given her at that time? Would she have been a straitjacket or whatever happened to Baby? You know what? Look at what they gave the actresses at that point.
Yeah.
And they were only in their
50s. Now, the only thing is, I tell you, the one person who did really well in my mind once she reached, you know, the sort of the quote golden years was Barbara Stanwyck, because she was on.
She was great.
What was that Western? She was on Old
Big Valley. And I've never seen one episode, but I heard it's great. Yes.
Yeah. And then she was on. Then she did those the nighttime soap opera
Dynasty. I think she did, or the Colbys, one of those.
Yeah, they were all those spinning off.
And she did that mini series, The Thornbirds. Oh my God! Yeah. I think I'm going to post it on the website on Facebook tomorrow. This incredible acting scene where she is telling the priest she loves him and she wants him to kiss her. And he says, "You're an old woman," and her acting after that is just amazing. So let's get back.
I know exactly the same time.
Yes, it's amazing.
But the thing about Kay is, okay, she hangs it up, so she steps out. It's sort of similar to Norma Shearer did the same thing. Norma sort of said, you know, and Greta Garbo did the same thing. You know, Norma said something about, you know, no actor should be seen after she's like 40. You know, again, this is, you know, 1948. So Kay steps out. But then when you look at the movies that she made, her best movies were pre-code.
Oh, I loved. She was amazing.
Yeah, but they're not going to be shown on TV. And they're not going to be reissued and shown, you know, as the second half of a double feature at the Bijou. So her movie, her body of work really just sort of sat there through the 40s and the 50s and, you know, into the 60s. She died in 68 and was really almost forgotten except for some, you know, art house type things and you know, more of the cliquish type of theaters. And really, you know, what caused Kay to become popular was Turner Classic Movies, and really one person in particular, and that was Robert Osborne.
Whom I adore and I miss. He was my comfort guy. I love him. Yes, and he loved Kay. There's a lot of tributes and things he does in the opening of her stuff. I didn't know who she was, and they showed so many of her movies, and I'm holding the IMDb here. So she was only 63 when she died, and you said she died of...
She died of breast cancer.
Yes. But listen to what this little tidbit. It says, Kay Francis, possibly the biggest of the forgotten stars from Hollywood's golden era. Yet, for a while in the 30s, she ranked as one of the most popular actresses, tagged the queen of Warner Brothers, by 1935 earning a yearly salary of $115,000, compared to Bette Davis with $18,000. Wowza. Right. And $115,000 was a lot of money for people today. Think of it then.
She was making more money per year than the CEOs of a lot of major corporations in the 30s. Okay. She was one of the highest paid people in the country.
She was, and you know, she was, and yes, she is a lavishing Kay Francis. She couldn't say her R's, which just made her more charming to me. I thought she was adorable. Yeah. And she was 5'9", where most of the actresses, like Norma Shearer and Betty Davis, Joan Crawford, they were about 5 feet or 5'2". A lot of them were pretty, not big. And Barbara Stanwyck, I think, was about 5'4". And Kay was stately. She had such a presence. And she was a good actress to boot. So there you go. Right.
Well, you know, if you look at I've seen her first movie, which was a movie called Gentlemen of the Press. Wow. And it came out that she got the part through Walter Huston, who knew her through her work in Broadway. This was actually they were both working on Broadway and making movies at the Paramount Theater or Paramount Studio in New York. And, you know, if you look at that movie, the first scene is a shot of her coming through the door, and they do a full pan from her feet all the way up to her head. And, you know, compared to the other 1929 movies, you know, I'm sure that the crowd had to be going, wow, you know, who is this? Because, you know, she's 5'9". She has this raven black hair that she has sort of a severe cut.
Yes.
Short cut. And, you know, she had a voice that worked very well with those early sound equipment. You know, she didn't have a real high, squeaky voice. I mean, she had sort of a contra alto type of voice. And she really came across well in that early sound clip.
She was so original. I mean, there's nobody you could compare and say, oh, that she reminds me of Kay Francis. There's nobody in the world that you could go like that. You know, no actress that I've ever think of. So it says here, which one was the first movie?
Gentlemen of the Press was her first movie.
And it has here so much. Did you ever see A Notorious Affair with...
Yes.
You said you've seen all of her movies.
Yeah. I haven't seen all of them. No, I've seen 46. I'm trying to see. I want to see all 50 of them by the end of this month because it's the 50th anniversary. So, and it, let me tell you something. Some of them are a little tough to sit through.
They're really that bad, huh?
Well, you know, the thing is a lot of them just have really – the scripts are terrible. And that's one – the other thing I've discovered is if you go through these movies in the 30s and 40s, you know, they live and die with a number of factors, production value – co-stars, supporting cast, but boy, you don't have a script, you don't have a movie. And there's a lot of movies she has that have really poor scripts.
But she was good in A Notorious Affair, I thought. I thought she stood out.
That's when she was playing a lot of vamps. And if you remember the very beginning, if I got the right movie, comes in riding on a horse, and she's got the riding breeches and the boots, and she's got that sort of a top hat on there, you know,
and that short hair, severe cut.
Yeah. And she's smoking a cigarette with a holder, a real long holder on it. Real, you know, very noticeable, very, very big entrance.
She was really good. And I thought that was a stinky movie, but you know, Kay certainly,
But then again, you know, you look at you had Basil Rathbone and you had Billy Dove. Now, I mean, those are three great actors.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a stinko script.
Ooh, did you ever see Passion Flower when she played Dulce?
Actually, that is one of the ones I haven't seen yet.
Oh, it's good. You got to see it. It's got what's her name? The director's wife, Cromwell. What's her name? She did a lot of Precodes. I can't remember, but she was good. And what's his name? That kind of big, kind of burly dude. Charles, he was in Anna Karenina. No, not Anna Karenina. The first one.
Yeah, he ended up being like more of a, his finished his career sort of almost like a supporting actor, didn't he?
Yeah, because he was like this big, brawly guy.
Charles Bickford.
That's him.
Charles Bickford.
You got it. That he's in it as well. And then the guy who plays Andy Hardy's dad is in it as well.
Lewis Stone.
Yes, yeah, he was very good.
Yeah, the woman I think you might be, is it Kay Johnson?
Yes, you got it.
Yeah.
She was married to Cromwell, and his son is an actor and also a director and producer, Richard Cromwell, who is in a lot of stuff.
And actually, Kay was very good friends with Kay Johnson. They were, I think they like lived together when they first came to L.A. So,
okay, so let's look into this. Okay, Guilty Hands. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
That was with Lionel Barrymore, right?
Yeah, and actually, have you seen that one, Guilty Hands?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a very good movie. I think she does a good job on that.
I do,
sort
too.
Of a, it's sort of a movie where Barrymore plays a DA who tries to get away with the quote, perfect murder and frame it on Kay. And, you know, Kay sort of turns the table on him. I thought she did a very good job.
She did great.
Yeah, and that's one of those movies, too, where she wasn't relying upon, you know, so many people say, well, you know, she's just a clothes horse and she really didn't have a...
they're full of it.
Yeah, because actually I thought she did a very good job of acting in that
She
movie.
Did. Who was the other? Madge Evans? And who was a bad guy? She was going to marry, because her father represented this cad, the sleazy guy. And he wanted to marry the daughter, and the daughter calls it off because he wants to smooch a little before they get married the next day. Like, what is wrong with this woman? You know, grow up. They're getting married the next day. Oh, you beast. What's she going to say on their honeymoon? You know? It was absurd. You fiend. Now I know who you are. I'm looking at Girls of That Town. She was with who you asked me if I knew, Lillian Toshman, right?
Yeah.
And she was pretty cool.
Lillian Toshman has to be one of those characters you wish, you know, if you had a time machine, you'd like to go back to one of her parties, because you hear these stories.
Oh, my God. Who is she married to?
Parties.
The guy.
Edmund Lowe.
And they said that it was
lavender wedding, or right. Lavender marriage, as they used to call it.
But they were best friends, and they adored each other.
Yeah, well, and you know, Lillian died early, unfortunately, from cancer. And you know, there was talk, it was a marriage of convenience, and it was an open marriage, and blah, blah. But, you know, Edmund Lowe stuck with her all the way through to the end.
I mean, and they said he was devastated when she died. Yeah, because she was did you ever see Norma Shearer, Riptide? Frederick Marshall, Norma Shearer, and Lillian Toshman was in it briefly as Norma's sister. But she was supposed to have a bigger part. Norma loved her, too. But she had been ill. That cancer had gotten her then. She was probably, 30, if that, right?
So she's like 37, maybe?
Really?
I think she died like 1934, 35. Mm. Really, and it's a shame, because I think she would have had a pretty good career. You know, and she had been pretty much unable to work for a couple of years after that, or before that. So I think she would have had a good career if she would have been able to stay healthy.
Did you ever see Millie? She was great in that with Joan Blondell.
Yeah. Well, you know, the common thing between those two movies is, in both movies, Lillian is in bed with the other female lead.
I love it.
There's a famous scene of, you know,
her and Joan Blondell.
And Bad, her and Kay and Girls About Town.
Yeah. It was really good. But Kay was pretty frank. You know, she had affairs with both men and women. And she wrote her diaries, and she was pretty honest in them.
You know, the thing about Kay's diaries that always surprised me is that, you know, she was during her life, she was a very private person. And even after she retired, you know, she would not give interviews. She didn't, you know, she sort of, you know, stayed to herself. But then when she died, she bequeaths these documents, which she knows includes a diary she kept for 30 years.
Yeah,
which
amazing.
Yeah. Has oodles and oodles of personal information.
But she writes it so beautifully. You know, it's very elegant scoops.
Yeah.
You know, very elegant stuff she writes. Very elegant.
Yeah, and a lot of it's very personal. I mean, it's some of it's her feelings. You know, she has a lot of feelings of inadequacy and, you know, those type of things.
Maybe but she
one
felt
thing
like,
on girls.
What? Go ahead.
Little piece of trivia on Girls About Town if you ever get a there is a scene where they have an auction where they're auctioning off a bunch of say, shall we say, their ill-gotten gains, their furs and their jewels from their various clients,
sugar daddies, and,
and one of the bidders for that is Frances Bavier, who it later goes on to play Aunt Bee.
No way.
In the Andy Griffith.
This is what, in the Girls About Town?
Girls About Town, 1931. There's a scene. There's like six, seven girls, and one of them, and it's on YouTube. You can find it.
Does it? And Aunt Bee.
Aunt Bee.
Ooh, you know, Aunt Bee. Ooh, Bee. She was a witch on the set. Nobody liked her.
Yeah, I know. That's the rumor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was an old school actress. So,
yeah, well, I think they all did pretty well. One Way Passage, I totally loved. And of the two, because they have one starring, and I think it's George Brent Day tomorrow on TCM. He did one with Merle Oberon that was a remake of One Way Passage, which our lovely Kay did with William Powell. And they really respected each other. If you read the diaries and everything, I mean, they had like a deep respect. And how many movies you think they did together?
You know, I think they did like a total of six, because they started it. They were at Paramount together.
Yes.
You know, Kay signed with Paramount, and then around 32, she, Bill, and Ruth Chatterton all flipped over to Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Kay signed the big monster contract. Bill left to MGM, and they did three or four movies, and I've seen all of them actually, and some of them were real, you know, again, they were real, it's almost like watching somebody perfect their craft. Yeah. You know, there was a movie called Behind the Makeup, which was real stilted, you know, and there was another one that he did for the defense. He was an attorney.
I remember that one. Yeah. And Kay, that was her girlfriend. She was his girlfriend.
Yeah. He was his girlfriend. And Kay had struck somebody with her car, killed a guy, you know, vehicular homicide.
Yes.
He covered up for her and he ended up in jail.
I love that Bill Powell with those dimples. He's one of my dreamboats.
Well, you know, the thing about Bill Powell, when you think about it, name me one movie that he appeared in which you didn't say that his leading lady, boy, she did a great job. I mean, he really, all of them, you know, whether it's Myrna or whether it's Carol Lombard or any of them, he just seems to be able to bring the best out of his female leads.
He's wonderful. I mean, Libeled Lady, that's one of my favorite screwballs.
Oh, that's a great movie.
And, you know, to think at the time, Jean Harlow, who wanted desperately to marry Bill Powell, but she wanted to play the Myrna part, but she got the other. She was so much better. That's where she belonged. She was great. Even Spencer, they were all just perfection. That is like a four-star movie. And that was Robert Osborne's favorite, I think, screwball comedy.
Really?
Yeah. So yours is, you like Jewel Robbery. Which one is the one that you like with him?
Jewel Robbery is, one message in my mind is like the perfect 1930s movie. That's the movie you watch when you got the sniffles and it's January and you're cold and you just want something. You want to believe it.
Put my socks on. Give me a blanket.
Yeah, that's right.
Put on Kay and Bill.
Yeah. Right. You know, it lasts only like 60 minutes. So you can suspend belief long enough to go along with the plot that long. I like Jewel Robbery. I'm a big dialogue guy. And I like Jewel Robbery because there's a lot of sort of that banter going on and the double entendre. And, you know, to me, it's a good example of Kay's ability actually to play comedy, although she never really gets the opportunity very much. And, you know, and Bill Powell's just perfectly cast.
Oh, my God. He just can play everything. You know, he's just incredible.
Well, you know, and that's the one thing, too, is you know, I was thinking about it, when you look at a lot of those actors that Kay appeared with, you know, people like George Brent. I mean, George Brent he's a good actor, but boy, you know, he's a little stiff.
He's a little stiff, but you know who I think is the stiffest? Who did I talk to? Oh, Cary Grant can't eat you. John Bowles. He's like John Boyles. He is the worst to me that he was an actor.
What was he in?
He was in Stella Dallas. He was in the first Backstreet with Irene Dunne. He was in The Age of Innocence with Irene Dunne again. And, you know, he's just like this big stuffed shirt creep.
Yeah.
So, he was so stilted. And so I think to me, George Brent is like, you know, fantastic if you see
the dynamo.
Yeah, you bet. But they said off screen he was a dynamo, and look at all the chicks he got. And he was married to Ann Sheridan. He had affairs with Betty Davis. I mean, he did it all.
Yeah.
And, oh,
That'd be another good bio to read. I think would be George.
Lewis. I would too. I think he has one on him as well because I read the Ruth Chatterton one, and she was married to him for a while, and let me look. Okay. Did you ever see Mary Stevens, MD?
Yes. That's one of my five quintessential K movies.
Really? How come?
You should see. I liked it because, first of all, I think it's a very indicative of the type of role that she played. She's a professional woman. She's a doctor. She played like three doctors.
Yes.
Three doctors and Florence Nightingale on top of it. And, you know, she's very independent. She is working. She's a woman in a man's world. And you know, there's a scene early on where there's a she's trying to deliver this baby.
Oh, yeah,
and this,
that's
you know,
great.
Italian guy is you know threatening to kill everybody
and her.
Yeah, and her, and you know why? You know, I wanted a doctor, and you're sending me this woman, and you know she comes through, and
get out of here. You know she gets,
tut, he's trying to run her out, and then they had, you know, and then of course you know, and Glenda Farrell's in it, who I like.
I love Glenda Farrell. She is such. I love her, and also a big guy in Pre-Code, Lyle Talbot.
Wow.
He was in tons of them. But the only bad thing about her is that she always went with the guy, even if he was a creep. As far as an independent one, because Lyle was a creep. He married some woman so he could get farther ahead, and he became a big drunkard.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a real louse. And she ended up, you know, and the amazing thing again, it's Pre-Code because she ends up pregnant by a married man.
Right.
And she decides to keep the baby and then loses the baby.
Oh, how heartbreaking!
You know, all the that again is sort of the
quintessential K.
Quintessential K, you know, the suffering K.
Yes, and I hate that she suffered, but she suffered because then again, there was her Mandalay.
Yes.
With the wonderful Ricardo Cortez. Like, I'm trying to think of his real name.
I think he was Austrian, wasn't he?
No, he was Jewish from the Lower East Side. He was like, Jesus.
Really? He was a New Yorker?
Oh, big time. Jacob something. Yeah.
Oh.
And they tried to pass him off as a suave Latino. But I have his biographer who's going to come on the show. So I'm excited about that.
That'd be good.
Because he's somebody you don't really hear about. So Mandalay is pretty sleazeball-y.
Yeah. The whole movie is pretty bad. The one of my favorite shots, really, of Kay in her entire career is at the very beginning of that movie, she is on a yacht waiting for Cortez, and he's in a little dinghy coming out to the yacht, and she's on the deck, and she's got this giant parasol, and she's waving to him, and I think that is probably you know, one of the best shots of Kay.
She looks beautiful. She's
pure,
wearing
beautiful.
Yeah,
shot,
she's. I think she has a flower in her hair, and she's wearing sort of a peasanty blouse. She looks very beautiful, and of course, Lyle Talbot's in it again. They did a lot. Do you know Lyle Talbot's son is on Facebook? He had like six kids. I'm trying to get him to come on the show. Wouldn't that be
good?
That would be a.
You know, Lyle Talbot, I think, lived to be in his. Like 90,
very old,
because I saw an interview of him, you know it's probably been 10 years ago, and he was probably 90 then,
did you ever see Dr. Monica?
Yes,
with
Dr. Monica. You're talking about the part played by Warren Williams.
Yes, he was great as a sleazy creep.
Well, the thing about that movie is he has an affair with Kay's best friend, gets her pregnant.
Slut.
She has a baby. Yes.
And Kay has to take care of it.
Kay delivers the baby.
After
out
hearing
it's his.
It. Yeah.
The amazing thing is then, you know, the girlfriend feels so much guilt. She gets in a plane, flies out in the ocean, and commits suicide. And the baby's left there. And Warren Williams walks in and goes, "Hey, we got a baby now. What do you know?"
It's so bizarre.
You're like, "You idiot. You know, that's your child."
Well, that's what she says to him. But he has no clue because
he's dumbfounded by it.
He didn't care. He wanted to bang that chick. Then he was off and he figured he loved Kay. But the thing was, Kay blamed herself so much. She could not have a child. She was going to have a surgery to see if she could have a child. She could not. And so, you know, like, okay, I'm going to give him up, and this is going to be our last honeymoon when they go, and he's wearing, I don't know, like a turtleneck, and he looks like he weighs 32 pounds on this when they're on vacation. And she takes blame, and I'm like, you know, that's another, I guess they had to in those days. I mean, she was strong, yet still acquiescing to the guy. I'm looking at this, The Goose and the Gander. Have you ever seen that?
You know, I have. That's one I haven't seen.
I never even heard of it.
That's a George Brent in that one, isn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah,
just this, she's Georgiana. I found Stella Parrish. That was a good one.
Yeah,
I think George Brent was in that one, right?
Yeah. I tell you one that I like, I think it's a good movie. And it's uniformly panned, and people say it's a reason it was a career killer for. And that's White Angel, which is the biopic of Florence Nightingale.
What year? Oh, here it is. It was
1936.
Yeah.
And you know, actually there was whoever the producer was on that. I think it was Wallace or one of them came out in his bio said that, you know, it was a huge mistake and we miscast it and all this stuff. But actually, I thought that she did pretty well because one is the kind of part she played. She was very often sort of a woman in a world dominated by men, fighting against men to get what she needed. You know, and that's what she was doing there. She's fighting the British Army in order to get the supplies and the hospital things that she needed. And the other thing, they always said that she played the part very, I heard the word comatose to describe it. But, you know, one thing is Kay never overacted. I mean, she was very sort of there's certain languor to her approach to things. I think when you look at it, I mean, Florence Nightingale isn't going to be every time somebody dies, Florence Nightingale, I'm sure, wasn't, you know, crying and wailing about every soldier.
No, because you have to, because you have to go to the next guy and try to help him live. You know,
you have to
just move on. Not that you don't feel the grief.
And you're not going to be able to, be able to take on these, you know, military guys, these generals, if – you know, you get into a screaming hissy fit with them. So, you know, I thought that was actually a pretty good part. The production values were good. I thought the script was pretty good. And, you know, I thought that was on whole, you know, it was a good movie. It wasn't one of her best by far, but I thought that she pulled it off pretty well.
You know, I never saw that. And I know it's played. I have to see it. Confession. Do you remember this one? Vera Kowalska? This is a movie that makes me mad.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember
this is the one, she has a daughter and I think Basil Rathbone is in this as well. She's an opera singer and she wants to leave. And it's like, oh, she's so great. And she's going to leave and get married to this guy. And then she has a baby and the guy goes to war. And then, I don't know, she gets drunk. She has a night out and she hooks up with Basil Rathbone again because she's bombed. And the husband comes home with one leg. And, you know, it's just this whole thing. So he takes the baby away from Slutty Kay because she was one night with Basil Rathbone. And I don't even know if she was. And Kay saw him going for her daughter, who was, what's that girl's name? The one who was in The Old Maid. Brian. Mary Brian? Something Brian? Remember?
Yeah, like Jane Bryan, maybe?
Yeah, Jane Bryan or something. Yeah. She would play the daughter, and she ends up shooting Basil Rathbone because he's going after the daughter. Fiend that he is. Then you and I talked about this one, and I loved. What did you say about it? She should have played more screaming meanies. What did you say?
Oh, yeah.
I laughed my head off.
Scheming
meanies. And what we're talking about is in name only, you guys. And this was a huge part for her. She was wonderful in this movie. And allegedly, Carol Lombard helped her get the role because they thought she was washed up, you know, box office poison.
Yeah, that was right after she had parted ways with Warner Brothers. Oh. And you know, and the whole thing with Warner Brothers, I never understood, is it, you know, got into it with Jack Warner, who had to be one of the biggest asses of all time. Mm-hmm. I mean, just everybody you talked to, no one liked Jack Warner. Even his own brothers couldn't stand him. But, you know, I don't understand how you can pay somebody as much money as they were paying her and then intentionally put her in B movies. You know, she was in, there's a movie called King of the Underworld. And she's with Bogart. And she
I've never seen it.
It's not a bad movie, but she's like third on the billing. I mean, she's like underneath the title.
You know,
she's underneath Bogart, and at that time, Bogart was basically just a sort of a gangster actor.
Duke Manatee.
That was like that was like 32. I think he played basically Duke Manatee all the way up until. John Huston and John Ford got a hold of him and he actually gave him a personality. See, that's the thing I can never understand. Warner Brothers were like once the pre-code year ended, Kay was in trouble because so many of her parts were sort of dependent on those kind of plots. And so instead of maybe looking, you know, let's put her in a rom-com or let's put her in, you know, let's move her into sort of, you know, one of these, you know, scheming meanie type things.
Carol Lombard had.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, instead of doing that, they made her like a mother. I mean, she had two or three movies. She had a movie called My Bill.
Oh, that was hokum up the wazoo.
Yeah. She was Anita Louise's mother, and you know, Anita Louise was like maybe 5 years older than her.
No way.
No. I mean, yeah, the difference in age there was not very much.
There was also Secrets of an Actress. I like that movie.
Yeah, that was an okay one. I liked it. And you know, once you start getting around that time, you know, you start getting some movies that are, you know, the quality really gets really rough.
But in name only was quality. It starred Carol Lombard and Cary Grant and Kay, and they all did a great job. Carol, this was Carol's period where she wanted to do some drama instead of comedy.
Right, and actually, when you see the cast there, you think it's going to be some kind of a, you know, a rom-com type of thing, and it's far from it.
Who's that wonderful woman who plays Maida's best friend, who's always after Kay? I love her. I try to think of her. She was in so many movies. Oh, and I loved her. Suzanne, but I can't think of her name offhand. She was great.
Helen Vinson?
Mm-hmm.
Helen?
That sounds at Vinson. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in a lot. She was a big supporting actor.
She was great in this. I'm Maida's best friend. But, you know, the thing that killed me in this is, A, you know, so he meets Carol Lombard and they get together 2 days in a row. And, you know, all of a sudden they have this love relationship. You know, they never kiss or anything, but he's in love. But he's starved for love because Kay is a scheming meanie. And, you know.
Well, and I mean, she's so scheming. She invites Carol to a
garden party
at her house, knowing that, you know, it was going to make a big scene.
Because she told Ned, the doctor, who, what's it, his business? I think he had the hots for Maida, myself.
Yeah.
What was his business? She told, oh, Ned, no, I just have a headache. And then when Ned told the parents, Ned, I'll never speak to you again. And whatever, you know, but it was awful. It was awful. She has her walk into a thing. What got me was that the parents did not, you know, wouldn't you support your son anyway and say, you know, okay, but we love our son, and he's in love with someone else, and tough S-H-I-T, Maida, meanie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they were, you know, she was definitely trying to win them over.
Oh, she did. And, she kissed ass up the wazoo.
At the very end, she gets her comeuppance. But,
I love that. That's the greatest comeuppance. But you know another thing that makes me mad in this movie is that note that Cary Grant got from the mother of the man who committed suicide that Kay really loved, that she and that Kay said, I have to choose money. You know how much it means to me. I really love you. I don't love him. And Cary Grant doesn't use that. In divorce court, he gives it to her and she throws it away. You know?
Yeah.
Bizarre. Yeah. Bizarro. But it was a good
movie.
Well,
you know, the thing about Kay's character Maida was that she had, there was two men who really loved her. One of them, you know, the guy she drove to suicide. And the other one, I think, was a doctor.
Oh, he was hot for her.
Yeah. And you know, both of them, she just wouldn't give the time of day because she was chasing after Cary Grant's money.
Well, maybe she got the doctor at the end of the movie and Ned, and she had many headaches. Oh, dear. She could have. Yeah. She deserved Ned. Ned deserved her.
I you were talking about, you know, I can't figure out what the connection is, you know, the love connection is. The movie that I can never figure out, and it's actually a decent movie, is British Agent, 1934, and it has Leslie Howard plays the lead. Have you seen that one?
And she's a Russian.
Yeah, she works for Lenin, and he is a British diplomat.
Yes.
And, you know, they meet in a restaurant, fall madly in love, and, you know, all of a sudden he's, like, getting these top secret, you know, cables. And, you know, here's Lenin's secretary sitting across, you know, sitting next to him, and he's reading them out loud. like, this isn't going to work well.
Oh, you know? But I love you. I love you, darling.
Now, the best part of that movie, the thing that's the best part of the movie, though, is Kay Francis absolutely rocks a leather overcoat, like trench coat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, she just looks stunning. And, you know, if you're going to be part of a proletariat revolution, you got to look good. And that's one thing Kay could do.
She looked fab. She was really the fabulous Kay Francis. So what I'm seeing here, so after pretty much In Name Only, did she buy into a company, a movie studio, or was
her
it
last, cheaper? Her last three movies were... she was a sort of an independent producer. It was Monogram was the name of the.
Oh, that's it. You're right.
Thing and it, you know, I think she sort of bought into the company, produced three movies, which I haven't seen yet. Those are three. It's weird because some of these movies I have easy access to, and some of them I really have trouble finding.
Allotment Wives.
Have you seen that? No, I haven't.
Wife Wanted. That was more Rosalind Russell. What's his name? Van Heflin and Don Ameche were in that film. That was their last film.
I thought that movie was earlier. With I know the movie you're talking about.
The Feminine Touch.
That's what it was. The Feminine Touch. That was more of a comedy.
Yes, that was
Rosalind and Donna Meachie and Van Heflin. That was a fun little movie.
I didn't see Four Jills in a Jeep.
I've seen that. That's a huge disappointment because what happened was she went on a tour of. They were the first all-female group to tour along some of the battlefront there.
It was Carol Landis.
It was Carol Landis, Kay.
And Martha Ray. And I don't remember
and,
the fourth person.
It was Mitzi Mayfair, who was a Broadway dancer. And actually, Carol Landis wrote a book about called Four Jills and a Jeep about their adventures. And whoever the studio was bought the rights to it, 20th Century Fox or somebody like that, I think. But they bought the rights to it. They filmed a lot of it with the girls doing the numbers with the four of them. Mm-hmm. Then just before they released it, they decided that, we need bigger stars. So then they inserted cameo appearances by like Betty Grable and Carmen Miranda and all the, it's just sort of randomly thrown together. The movie sort of loses its plot. It's a shame because I think it's one of those movies. It could have been a nice little movie and it was really hacked up pretty badly.
Yeah. I had a guy who wrote Carol Landis's, one of her biographies. It was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Carol's one of my favorites. I really think, it's a classic case of a career that just should have been more. She had a lot of talent and very beautiful actress, but just never quite.
She kind of threw it away and went into, she could never find herself. And I learned a lot from the guy. I don't remember who the biographer was. He was great. And he still goes every year with his wife to Carol's burial place and brings flowers. And he said, if I ever go to LA, he'll take me there. Wowie. I'm going
The thing, going to Forest Lawn or whatever. Yeah. But the thing about Carol was, she committed suicide in 1948.
And how big is it? That image sticks out because from what? Her in a little pinafore and her shoes and she's laying there and she's dead. That was in Hollywood Babylon or something. But I just, that's how everybody pretty much knows her from, is from that picture.
That's true. But, she had entertained as much during World War II, the troops traveled as much as anybody.
She was a trooper times 20, and she got ill.
She had all kinds of recurring illness. But the thing was, I always thought that if she would have survived and kept away from Rex Harrison, who's one of the biggest scumbags in history.
Oh, I knew people who worked on Broadway, and they said he was the meanest FUC. And he was he worked with his the wife that he dumped. Kay Kendall. And he said he was such a bastard to her, so cruel. And they wanted to beat him up. He was just a real creep.
But Carol, she had contacts through the USO shows with Jack Benny and Bob Hope. She was multi-talented. She had a great voice. That's how she started her career, was singing. And she could dance a little bit. And she was very, personable, did a lot of live shows so she could work her feet. She would have been a perfect person for TV. And, also, frankly, she was built, her build was more toward Marilyn Monroe than it was, some of the 30s, stars. I mean, she was just built that way. So, I think if it's a shame because maybe her time would have come, in the early 50s if she would have just stayed.
I didn't know, though. It was her fate. She was fated to meet him and poor thing. I don't think she meant to die. She put those things and she called people and she did what she used to do.
Yeah.
But what are you going to say? Okay.
You take 50 second holes. It's not going to end well for you.
No. Did she take 50? Yikes.
Yeah. So.
Poor lady. Okay. So I'm going to stop. We did the K stuff.
Uh-huh.
I am curious because you said you have 10 favorite actresses that you bet I would not have and I'd be surprised at. So give me.
I got my 10, which I think you're going to, I know you're positive you're going to have some of them.
I think we will. Couple.
But I don't think, but I, you know, I think if we did a thing, you know, who are the 10 best actresses, we might meet 7 or 8. I don't know if we're going to have.
I don't know if it's even the best actress. It's someone who I like, even if they're not. To me, you know, my number one is Babs Stanwyck. I love her. She's number mm-hmm. one. So you go on and give me your 10.
Okay.
Lay it on
All right.
me.
Well, you know, Kay, of course, is number one.
Yay.
My number two is Thelma Todd.
Thelma. Huh. Well, that's a surprise.
Thelma Todd, who, you know, first of all, I think is just beautiful. I mean, she is just a gorgeous actress.
She was in the cat fight one with what's her face? That was so
Clara
good.
Clara Bow.
Oh, that was yeah. some kind of pretty good well, movie. You, yeah.
The thing about her is she's game. I mean, you're talking about somebody who starred in two Marx Brothers movies.
Right.
And, you know, her comic abilities were sensational. And I got into a little... not argument, but a discussion on one of the Thelma Todd groups that I felt that Thelma Todd was really the trailblazer in the beautiful woman who does physical comedy. She was the first one that, you know, there were other, you know, female comedies. There was other female teens comics, but they weren't, you know, just stunningly attractive, you know. Mabel Normand was pretty, but she wasn't, you know.
And she went down early. Didn't yeah. she die of heroin addiction or something?
Yeah, she had all kinds of addictions, and she got tied up in that
William or the director.
William Desmond.
Yeah. Oh, William it's Desmond. A really good. It's yeah. it's a really good.
That's
book.
Where that's where the writer got half the Norma Desmond. That's where he got half of her her name was from William Desmond.
Yeah.
He wanted a name that sounded somewhat familiar. So, you know, I think she's a bit of a trailblazer, that she led the way for people like Lucille Ball and, you know, Doris Day and people like that, who are, you know, very, very pretty women who, you know, could take a pratfall.
As well as Carol Lombard, because Carol did Precodes. She did, yeah. you know, drama. And yeah. she did very well. There's one I really like is Virtue, where she plays a prostitute. And she tries to go, and she does go clean, but her husband finds, you know, whatever. It's really good. Mayo Metho was in that.
But even those movies with Carol, you know, Carol Lombard, she's not. I mean, you know, the Hal Roach movie. You know, you're
really,
gonna, you know, you're
pie in your face.
Car,
you're
yeah,
the whole
pie
nine
in your face.
Yards,
you're
yeah.
going. You know, your car's going into a lake. Mm-hmm. You know, all these crazy things.
Yeah.
So that's number two. Number three. Another one I know you don't have, Una Merkel.
I love Una Merkel, but she wouldn't be one of my faves, but I adore her. She is a great
I think
actress.
She's really awesome. She, you know, she started her career with D.W. Griffith as a stand-in for Lillian Gish, and she finished it 40, 50 years later in a Elvis Presley movie.
Was it? So, and she was also in, what one is that one? The one she plays a kleptomaniac, Summer and Smoke.
Yeah, yes. And I think she might have gotten a nomination for a award for that. If
she
I'm
was
not
good.
Mistaken.
She was very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, she was good.
That.
She was very good. In her pre-code thing, she was always the best pal for all the pre-code leading ladies.
Redheaded women, Loretta Young and yeah. all these other. Yeah. But I loved her. Yeah. I thought she was great. I did too.
My fourth one, I know you're going to have this one, would be on your list. And this might be my winner for best actress. And that's Ginger Rogers.
I love Ginger.
Multi-talented.
Dances.
Multi-talented.
Sings.
Dances, can sing. You know how, you know, what is it, 42nd Street, the very beginning where she sings We're in the Money.
Yeah.
And he has got the little, wearing nothing but dimes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sweetheart.
Yeah. I love Ginger. And she is so underrated. She really is. And I love her.
And she had some great comedic roles there, and then, you know, she won an Academy Award for Kitty Foyle.
And I thought she was incredible in the next film. Did you see it? She from her mother was a hooker, her grandmother. What the heck is the name of that film? was really good. I can't remember the name of it. Primrose Path. That's it.
I don't know if I've seen it.
It's a goodie. It's a goodie.
So she's my number four. Number five, I know for a fact, because you've already said it, Barbara Stanwyck.
I love her. She's my number one.
I love her. She can do it all. I mean, I think her comedic parts are great. She has an air of class about her, although she also played, you know, was a Pretty Baby, which might be as pre-code as
Baby Face.
Baby Face. That was what it was.
I love it when the guy, oh, yes, and then she hits him over the head with a beer bottle, then she goes back to the table and starts sipping her beer. I love her. She was great. So, she never gave a false note.
I saw I read an interview with her from probably in the 60s or something, and she said that the key to acting for theater and TV is to act with your eyes.
And she did.
And I always thought that was a great quote, because she always seemed, you know, she never, you know, she wasn't waving her arms, she wasn't, you know, making faces, you know, everything she communicated through her eyes.
She was, and when she looked at you, when she was in love with you, you could see she was looking at you with love. And the thing about Ruth Chatterton, I put on the Facebook thing today. Ruth Chatterton, because I read her book, she was in a room, and Ruth Chatterton was just Ruth Chatterton. She was very independent, very loud. And she's, oh, look, she has to have those things. She can't make her own tears. And they were enemies from now on. Babs and her were never friends. Because Ruth was pretty outspoken. She was very outspoken at the time. And who is next?
Joan Blondell.
I love Joan. Love her.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart, especially in those on those pre-code movies. She played the Jimmy Cagney and Joan Blondell movies are great.
He said, as far as women he loved his wife and he loved Joan Blondell.
Wow.
Because they were great together. They were fabulous. And they started on Broadway together. And they did. Did you ever see the movie? It might have been their first movie. And it was on like a Coney Island thing. And the mother was like, he became a gangster. Joan was trying to get him to go straight. I can't remember the name. It was really good. And the mother, she was the inspiration for the Wicked Witch in Snow White. Oh, God, you got to see that mug. What a mug.
Yeah. The movie I remember is they had Footlight Parade, which was a early sort of musical where Joan was, you know, Joan fell in love with Cagney, but Cagney, of course, fell in love with Claire Dodd, who always seemed to be the heavy girl, you know, the one trying to steal somebody's husband or trying to steal somebody's boyfriend. And I thought that was a great movie. Yeah, Trollope is a good way to put it. My next one, seven, is Carol Landis, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. Eight's Myrna Loy. Started with
Lover.
Yeah, started, you know, she started sort of in those vamp roles, similar to what Kay did. And
she played in 13 Women, Eurasian, or, you know, total vamps. I saw this really interesting movie. I think Loretta Young had a nose job. I saw this movie, they call this kid, I don't know, she falls in love with this old man, and Myrna plays a vixen, and who's in it? David Manners. Who is in all pre-codes. I don't think he does anything other than pre-codes. But I remember the name. I'd advise people to see it because Myrna is a real vixen.
Yeah. It's funny how she went from that. And then she, you know, I think with the help of Bill Powell, she becomes a sophisticate. And then at the end, she's, you know, supposed to be the woman that everybody wants to marry.
Yeah, the so mom, Mr. Blandings. Yes, because, it wasn't the first Thin Man in 1934.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think that was her big break. And that was a break that Kay never got, was the opportunity to play in that kind of a role. It was a career changer, because she was in Manhattan Melodrama with
he just like spunkily walks to the electric chair.
Like he's gonna go get a pack of cigarettes,
right, or get a brewski, you know. Okay, here I go, don't worry, I'm cool, yo. I hate that. Okay, so who's next?
Okay, number nine is, and this is stepping out of my,
can
my
hear
area
this?
Here. Oh, is that the
drum roll?
The thing. Number nine, and this is stepping out of my era, but I've been a little bit of a kick watching her movies here lately. Doris Day.
I love Doris.
Doris Day is, you know, well, first of all, I'm from Doris Day's hometown, so she's a hometown girl, and you know, she was another one of those people was when I was growing up, you know, Doris Day Square, blah, blah, blah. But then you start seeing some of her work and, you know, first of all, she has a gorgeous voice, probably outside of Judy Garland. There's not been a better voice.
And what a figure. She had a great figure. And she was also like 5'8".
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you talk about her figure. I read somewhere where some of her co-stars, male co-stars, of course, in the early 50s, voted her to have the best butt in Hollywood. and I thought that was funny. And I never really noticed. And then I started watching movies. Like, I guess. But then I watched two movies. One was Send Me No Flowers with Rock Hudson.
I love that one.
Oh, that's a great – those Rock Hudson movies are funny, especially with Tony Randall.
They're my God. All three they did with Tony Randall. Yeah. They're fabulous. Yeah.
But she gets locked out of the house. You know, Rock Hudson's asleep. She gets locked out of the house in just her nightgown. She tries to, you know, break into her house. She opens up a window, tries to crawl through the window, and the window falls on top of her. And her neighbor is standing, you know, comes out, and, you know, she's standing there, and all you can see is her derriere up there. And I'm like,
She really and did.
And then in Glass Bottom Boat, you know, that's with Rod Taylor.
Yeah.
And she's in an office and she's sort of trying to hide from him. And she tries to hide underneath the desk. And he, instead of coming in the front door, comes in sort of the side door. And when he comes around, you know, all he sees is, you know, Doris's
cute little buttocks.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, that, you know, you don't think of that, but I wonder if that's intentional or, you know, just sort of fortuitous.
she really had a great bod. It's Doris Day, I think, Day Sunday on TCM, Saturday or Sunday. No. And they have all their great films. There's this one. I wonder if you saw. It's a drama and it stars Doris, Ginger Rogers, Steve Cochran and Ronald Reagan. And it's about the Ku Klux Klan.
No.
Oh, my. It's wild. Ginger gets whipped. She's got tied to a tree and she gets whipped. And, murder somebody and Ginger sees the murder and it ends up being caused by Doris's Steve Cochran. So I could remember the name. I'll figure it out, but it's really good. And there's Ronnie. Ronnie Reagan's there. So you can check that
out. So my final person, and this one I guarantee you don't have. This one I have mainly because she's one of my little preoccupations when I watch pre-code movies. That's Toby Wing.
I don't even know who that is.
Toby Wing was a actress who was in a ton of movies in the pre-code era. She was in 42nd Street when they do the song Young and Healthy. And she's the one that's singing with, what's his name, Powell. She sort of has this sort of ice blonde hair that she wears in sort of a flip, short flip, almost mm-hmm. like a 60s style. And she is in it seems like she's in every movie. And it's all uncredited and it's all often it's like almost in an extra role. You know, you'll be watching a movie and the leads will be dancing on a crowded dance floor. And all of a sudden, you know, there goes Toby.
And she's just like an extra. She, a lot of times she doesn't talk, right?
She does. Well,
was she in Babyface? Was she in Babyface?
The story I heard. Yeah. Well, yeah. She was in.
And
that
she had to say yes.
Yeah, she was in a ton of movies, and yeah, she and
she worked with Busby Berkeley, but I don't.
She was a Busby. She dated Busby Berkeley. She was sort of a she was frequently engaged, and the story that I heard is that the reason that she didn't have more speaking parts was because she was from Virginia, rural Virginia, and she had a very strong accent, and she just couldn't get rid of it. And the other interesting thing about Toby is that she was. Her name Toby came from the family horse.
I love Toby. That's a cute name.
So, you know, and she's sort of neat because she married a guy's name was like Frank Merrill or something like that. He's one of those sort of daredevil pilots they had in the '30s. You know, like Wiley Post.
Stunt pilots. Yeah.
And he ended up. She married him, and he ended up being like. You know, vice president or president of Eastern Airlines. So I think that I think she had a pretty good life in those regards. But she's always one of those people that when I watch her pre-co, I always look in the background and see if I see Toby.
Yeah, that one I would have never known. I didn't know her name. I think I know who you're talking about, but no.
Yeah, if you get a YouTube, I think it's called Young and Healthy, and you know, that movie, you have Ginger Rogers, you have Anna Merkel, you have Ruby Keeler, and you know he's singing to an uncredited actress, and it's Toby.
Well, I have to admire you for knowing who she is because I don't know. You should start a Toby page.
If I ever started a blog, I was going to title it "Toby Wing is Everywhere."
That's perfect. You should do it because I'm sure there's other Toby lovers, not just you. I'm sure there are. There's got to be.
Well, it's almost like Where's Waldo? You know, you look around there. I mean, literally, I was watching some movie. You know, a few months ago, and you know, the leads walk into a apartment. There's a wild party going on, and there's a woman up on the table with her dress off, and it's Toby.
And she never has any lines. I think she may have been baby faced with John Wayne and said she's moved up from you or something. I don't know. I think she might have had a line in that. If she's who I'm thinking of, she's very, very blonde hair.
She has almost like that Jean Harlow.
Right. And kind of an innocent face. She doesn't look hard. I think I know exactly who you're talking about. So you're right. Many of these people were not on my list. And Toby, I never knew her name.
See, now she's on your radar. And now when you watch movies, you're going to be watching to see if you see Toby.
Because I think the woman I think is Toby is Toby. So that's pretty cool. Guess what? We did an hour and 12 minutes. And you,
that's pretty good.
You were fabulous and you were worried, but you were great. I felt so... Because you know so much, it's been a pleasure for me. This has been a blast. Oh, I hope you had fun.
Oh, I had a great time here. I'm glad that you're so easy to talk to. I was afraid I'd get on here and you'd be, you'd be criticizing all my faux pas.
No. I'm nice. Nobody's ever had a complaint that I'm a meanie. Yeah, you know, I'm happy you come on. I would never be a mean person. And you were great. So what can I say?
Oh, great.
And I knew
you'd
be great. And I love your knowledge of all these things. And, you know, like I said, I'm just a fan. That's who I am, who puts out a podcast. But I'm a fan of classic movies. I love them. And you are too. And you know a lot of stuff. And I think that's great. And you gave the audience a lot of great tidbits. And they can look for Toby too. Yes.
That's right.
Toby too. Just like Toto too. But you can find Toby too. So I want to thank you so much, Steve, and I hope you are not banished from Facebook page.
You are not banished.
Oh, no, you were fabulous, and I enjoyed you tremendously, and I would love to have you back on again because you know your stuff, kid.
Oh, thank you.
And you're easy and you're fun, so I had a wonderful time. Seriously.
All right, I did too, Grace. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye, everybody. Thanks, Steve. Bye.
Bye-bye.
True Stories from Tinseltown. We're on iTunes and everywhere else. Bye.
In the heart of little old New all New York that runs into Times Square. Our crazy quilt at Wall Street, Jacksonville. If you've got a little time to spare, I'd like to take you there. Come and meet those dancing feet. On the avenue, I'm taking you to 42nd Street. Here's a beat of dancing feet. It's a song I love, the melody of 42nd Street. Little nifties from the 50s, innocent and sweet. Sexy ladies from the 80s who are indiscreet. All the side by side, they're glorified. Where the underworld can meet the elite, 42nd Street.
Street and the beat of dancing feet.